This is KRA News. I'm Rick Holter. A statue of Robert E. Lee was at the center of the violence last weekend in Virginia. There's also a statue of Lee just a few blocks from our studios, on the edge of downtown Dallas. This week, Mayor Mike Rawlings called for a task force on the Confederate memorials in Dallas, and the Dallas School Board will debate next month how to tackle schools named for Confederate leaders, which makes this a good time for a history lesson. For this week's Friday Conversation, historian Michael Phillips is here to look back at the Confederate history of North Texas. Michael Phillips, welcome to the Friday Conversation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You've written a book called White Metropolis that goes back to the founding of Dallas. This town wasn't even 20 years old when the Civil War started.
You know, you had a small town, but it was really heavily dependent on the cotton slave economy. There was a fire in 1860 in Dallas that was a year before Texas would vote on secession. From accounts, people were smoking. It was a time of a drought, which is a common experience in Texas during the summer. One person described a worker working on the roof of a building. He tosses a match, and there's all this dry kindling, basically. The whole town was kindling at that point, and the fire goes up. But there were all these paranoid rumors that slaves were plotting a rebellion. There had been a couple of northern ministers who were accused of being abolitionists, and supposedly they had spread abolitionist doctrines to the slaves. And so what happens is these three slaves get hanged. They gather all the slaves together to watch the hanging, to send a message. They're mass whippings of slaves. And this causes a panic across the state of Texas that comes to be known as the Texas Troubles. And there's an estimate that 117 people were murdered basically by lynch mobs. And this is right before Texas decides to leave the Union and join the Confederacy.
So this is right at 1860. There weren't any battles here, of course. A lot of troops went from here to other places. When did the efforts to memorialize Confederate leaders take root?
That's the thing about these monuments. They have less to do with the Civil War, I think, than about the politics of the time they were built. They build a Confederate War Memorial, which is now right by the convention center.
Right.
You have Jefferson Davis, Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, etc. That's in 1896. The Lee Park statue and the naming of Lee Park, which used to be Oak Lawn Park, is 1936. Those decades happen to be the peak years in which poll taxes were implemented in Texas, Jim Crow laws are being implemented in this period, and most horrifically, that's when Texas ranked third in the Union in terms of number of lynchings. This is a peak time of racial oppression.
Now, the Klan was a central player in Charlottesville last weekend. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks here don't realize that Texas was ground zero for the Klan less than a century ago. How did the Klan develop here in the 20s?
Dallas had the largest Klan chapter when the Klan was reborn. Mm-hmm. It's in the 1920s that the Klan takes over Dallas. You had a lynching of a Jewish man named Leo Frank, and that's the event that is credited with the return of the Klan. The Klan was anti-immigrant. It was anti-black. It was anti-women's suffrage. And you had a dentist in Dallas whose office was across from the downtown Neiman Marcus store named Hiram Wesley Evans. And the founder of the second Klan was overthrown by Evans. And they used to have Klan Day at the state fair. You used to get, you know, discount if you showed up in your hood and your sheet. And I mean, law enforcement, the Dallas Times Herald, which is a paper, then had people in positions of authority who were Klansmen. The Morning News officially opposed the Klan. Mm-hmm. The Klan completely ran the city. So this was definitely Klan central.
Are you surprised we're still having this conversation?
No, because I think it serves a political agenda. If these monuments were only about the past, they would not be such a serious issue today. Mm-hmm. These monuments are tied to what you could call a cult of the lost cause. It's born in defeat. And so it gives them a narrative where they're a persecuted but special people. It serves more as a statement of defiance that white people control public spaces. That's what those monuments say.
Historian Michael Phillips from Collin College, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.